Welcome to Functional Design in Closure. I'm Christoph Newman.
And I am Nate Jones.
We're here to help you use closure and functional programming together, because they are one and the same, of course, to make your everyday life as a developer less frustrating and more fulfilling.
Absolutely. We love closure and we want to help you love it too. So, are you new to the podcast? Welcome. We are so happy that you're here, but we're kind of a little ways into this. So you can go back to episode one or on closuredesign.club and see every episode and series, see where you might want to pick it up. And we're now currently we just kicked off a new series last week. So if you want to go back and see what kind of give it a little bit of context, start with episode 114. And so let's see, what are we actually talking about in this series, Christoph?
Well, this series, like all the best series, came from a real life problem. And my problem was that I dove back into a code base.
Ah.
And oh man, it had been 14 months. And yes, I did write most of the code, although there was at least one other developer that wrote some code. So we're not going to point
any fingers or anything. Who could that be?
And when you dive back into a code base that you wrote, that's when you really know how kind you are to other developers in a project.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree.
I don't know. Do you relate to any of that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if I was able to go back to that code base, I would be even farther out than 14 months. But but I actually, a few years ago, started working with a large existing code base. And I got to be the one that experienced what other developers inflicted on me, intentionally or not. I like to think not intentionally. But yes, I mean, I've definitely, you know, open source projects or things that, you know, I've gotten back to, I definitely feel the pain of trying to go back to code that even if I wrote for some of it and how hard that is. And so it kind of points to a lot of the, like, why we do a lot of these air quotes best practices. I'm not really a big fan of that phrase, but we call them that because you should do that. And I think one of the big reasons is because you want to be friendly to people that come into your code base, you know? And so
yes,
that's kind of what we're talking about, is how do you set up a code base so that it's easy to understand and work with for your future self, for other people, anyone that might join, you know?
Yes. Yes. And I mean, that is definitely a big topic. And so in this series, we're going to take little slices of that. And I do have to say that diving back into this code base after 14 months actually ended up being a fairly pleasant experience for all of the worry and fear that I had going in. But I guess I was a little afraid of that crazy developer who made it. I didn't trust myself as much as I should. But yeah, so let's bite off little slices of this in this series. And so where's a good place to start? What do you think, Nate?
Well, if I have to think about one commonality among all the projects I've ever worked on, is that they all have code in them. You can talk about documentation or test cases or other things, but every single project has code. I think if you're listening to this podcast and your projects don't have code in them, you might need to search for, you know, woodworking or pottery or crocheting or some other thing, that whatever's in your project, look for that. But in this podcast,
project management,
we like code projects. And so I think we should start with the code. Does that sound like a good place to start?
I think the code sounds like a great place to start. So where in the code, though?
Well, you start at the top. That's how you write it, right? You just start at the top and write from the top to the bottom, right? So you...
That's how I code everything. It's just one really large file.
Well, you got to start on Main Avenue. You know, you got to start with in the middle of the city. Yeah, that's how you know how the city is put together, right? You got to start in the main.
Yeah.
Area.
Yes. 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 Let's start with Main, right? Let's start where the code starts running. I agree. But. And so I think, like, what is so important about Main, right? It is the entry point for the application. And okay, that's all well and good. So is that what Main simply is? It's just a place where the application starts, and then it runs in 10,000 directions. I mean, what is a good main, right?
Well, it's why is main so important? And it's everything in your application ultimately has to run, and computers run, you know, they start at one point in time and they continue on a thread, and they might spawn more threads and everything, but everything has to kind of be reachable from that starting point. So all parts of your code are reachable from main, or should be. I mean, I think we're going to sidestep, you know, job runners and that kind of stuff, things that might not be, but for in general, everything is reachable from there. And in higher levels of abstraction, you know, there's the leaves that are out that do the little tiny things, and they get built into bigger and bigger things. And eventually main is what stitches them together. And so that's why main is important, is because it's the thing that orchestrates your whole application. Make sense?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I think a great main is where you can open main and you can see what all the major parts of the application are and how they mm-hmm. fit together with each other. I think a terrible main is a system that doesn't have any main at all. And it has like 1,000 different entry points that are all over the place. And now all of a sudden, you know, code could enter over here or over there or who knows where. You know, a servlet spec. I'm staring at you, servlet spec. And where do you even start, right?
That's why I've always been terrified of the idea of writing an application using Amazon Lambda, because every function is an entry point. You know, is where's the cohesiveness of all that? You know,
right.
So same problem,
right? And so in the applications you and I have created together, our main does a few basic things, right? It sets up the runtime environment. So it like sets up logging, it sets up, you know, trapping the uncaught exceptions and things like that. Like for the backend, right? Like it's sort of like sets up that runtime environment.
Mm-hmm.
Key things like that. It gets configuration, right? Because a configuration needs to live outside of the application. Let's just take that as a good principle. It spins up the key parts of the application. We're going to call those components for the purposes of this series. And then it's going to get all that running and make sure that the application doesn't just exit immediately. In Clojure, if you're using Core Async and stuff, it'll start thread pools that keep running and things like that. But you need to make sure that it doesn't just race through main, hit the end, and then exit and you're done, right?
It's a very short-lived program.
So it keeps that system in a running state, waiting for it to be ready to shut down. So part of tooling. And so in this case, we're talking Clojure, right? So let's talk Clojure, JVM, backend. And then as a separate discussion, we can talk about front end, but Clojure, JVM, backend. So it's waiting for some signal from mm-hmm. the OS or the external environment for like, okay, this is going to be done. So you can kind of trace the whole life cycle. Like that is a great main in my mind.
Absolutely. And I think it might be able to go without saying, but I'm going to say it anyway. But all of these things are done via function calls to other functions in the same file or other parts of the application. And so it's not actually doing any of this itself. And so it ends up being, you know, 5, 6, 8 lines of code. It's a very compact way of you can scan it, and it's like a recipe, but it's a very high level recipe of what's going on. You know, it's not actually the one that's reading out of the environment variables or the one that's reading the log configuration and setting that up, or it doesn't actually have the component system as a let. No, that's maybe another function that's right next to it. But it's the thing that puts it, again, it should be only the top level orchestrator. And I think because it is that, then it is such a good place to start, because then every one of those functions you can, you know, I GD go definition is in my editor. And I can just GD and it will warp me to wherever that function is defined. And then I can explore that one and I have a key command that I can escape back out to the last level. And so it's a way you can start. So not only is it the overview of how you assemble the application together, it's actually like a jump off point to all the other parts, you know?
Yeah. And it's okay if some of those jump off points are their own little fractal, right? Even if some of these are major parts of the application, but you should be able to read this main and have it be concise enough that you feel like you have a sense of all of the major parts of the application and how they come together and relate to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so a key way you and I do that is through component systems.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And so one of the things main does, I'm sitting here staring at main code that, you know, we wrote. So in addition to logging the fact that it just started running and trapping uncaught exceptions, it reads configuration and then immediately makes a component system, which you and I really like component, the hard to Google for Clojure component system. But we spin up these components.
We don't like component. I mean, I won't speak for you. I'll speak for myself. I don't like component because it was the first one I encountered. I have actually had a lot of experience with the other, you know, lowercase c component systems. And I keep coming back to component. And one of the reasons why is because it has this system map and you can just look at the data structure in your code and you can just look at that and you can see all of the different components, all the different, you know, major players, the ones that are at the table that you need, like your database connection or your metrics aggregator or your, you know, there's all, or your web server connection, you know, like the inbound, you know, web connections. I mean, there's so many of those things, but to have them all at the same level, oftentimes it's in the same file, just in a function above main that assembles all those together. And so you can see, and even then you can have conditionals in there. You can build the map different ways or whatever, but you can see the different ways that it's built. And so it's right there in your code. And that's one of the reasons why I think component, capital T component, has been a favorite of mine.
Right, because the alternative to that approach where we bring them all together in this main, which I will admit sometimes feels a little weird because they have this file that has a require that is almost as many lines as the rest of the code, because I'm bringing every major part of the system together. So I have to require all of these pieces, but then I see what are all the big parts of the application and what are the entry points for those and how do they fit together? And because the alternative is these components that all, often their own little component land, declare dependencies on each other. And then you run into kind of the same nightmare that you run into with 1,000 microservices. You have all this stuff out there running independently and it's all calling or referencing each other. And you're like, oh man, like what's using what? What's calling what? Like how does information flow through? Right. And so all that dependency information gets spread all over the place. And the only way for you to begin to assemble and understand that is to either make a tool or find a tool that parses all of the files and gives you some kind of graph or something, or to parse all the files with your eyeballs and start building up an understanding of all these cross references all over the place. Right. And so a good main brings it together.
Yeah, we've talked previously, I forget what episode, but we'll put it in the notes. We talked about how lists are a good thing in applications, and the component map is essentially a list. It's a list of all the important things to look at in your code. And if you were to use something, I've encountered applications that use like mount or relay, or there's other component systems, but they don't have a single list. That it's like you were saying, it's the dependencies are in the files that define the components. And so you have to go and look at them. You know, it's like, imagine if you need to go to the grocery store and instead of having one list in your hand, you have a list in the pantry for the stuff from there. And you have a list in the refrigerator for the stuff from there. And you have a list in the, you know, in each different place. And so you have to go to all the different places to even understand what you need to go to the grocery store for, you know? So having it all in one place is essential for understanding.
Right, right. It's like having a book with no table of contents, and then you just have to thumb through this book, and you're like, and now imagine it's not some kind of EPUB digital thing where you can just skip from chapter heading to chapter heading. So you're holding this in your hand and you're flipping it with your fingers through the page, and you're like, oh wait, oh, there's a chapter. Okay, what's that one? Okay, flip, flip, flip. Oh wait, there's a chapter. What's that one? Okay, flip, flip, flip. Oh wait, there's a chapter. What's that one? Okay, now let me like dog ear all the pages so I can like come back and look at the chapter. Just make a table of contents. Just make the spot, right? Like here are all the key things, and here's where you can go find them instantly.
Yeah, at least books have the benefit of usually you want to read them from the beginning to the end, but lots of times in an application, you're going in there with a purpose. Your purpose isn't to read code. Your purpose is to solve a bug or to add a feature. And so you're like, I know I need to write something in the database. Where's the database component? Oh, well, I could just scan down that list. Boom, go right to that chapter.
Right.
And get to work, you know?
Yeah. And so every major piece that gets spun up, every component, there's some kind of implication in a thread pool or some execution context. Mm-hmm. So it also gives you an idea of, okay, I'm spinning up a web server. Well, that web server is running on some kind of thread pool. So now I have these entry points, if you will, from the web, right? Something's going to hit it. It's going to invoke code that's just sitting there waiting to be addressed. Okay, good to know. I have a database connection. That database connection is thread safe, so therefore it's being utilized by more than one thing. Okay, so this database is important. Now I can see, oh, it's being passed into the web components, being passed into the sessions component. Okay, good to know, right? Sessions are probably being stored in the database. The web handlers are probably going to do something with the database. Okay, that's great. And then put all those pieces together.
Yeah, and it really helps, like the interdependency between them. You can see really easily what depends on what and what, and because then only each component should only get what it actually needs. It shouldn't just get the whole map of every dependency. That might be convenient, but it's good to be like principle of what is it, least privilege, I think, where you only give something what it needs. You don't give it a map of stuff. You just say, here's the four things you actually need. And so, of course, the web connection probably needs, you know, almost all of the things, because it's, you know, the entry point needs to be able to send information across to the other components. But a lot of things are going to be much more minimal.
Yeah. And so I've just found when working with these components, they tend to fall into some large grained categories.
Mm, right.
So I tend to, in my applications, have like resource kind of components. So shared resources. So that would be a connection to database or a handle for establishing like a Kafka consumer.
Or like a thread pool or a worker. Yeah.
A thread pool, things like that. So it's like a resource kind of component. Then I tend to have components that are focused on data coming in, like some kind of integration coming in. That would be like a web component or a component that's doing some kind of polling and getting data in.
It's interesting to think about like your web component as being an input for your application. Like a lot of times it's hard to be like, well, the web server is the application, but no, it's not. It's just a part of the application that gets stuff in. So it's an integration in. It's an interesting way of putting it.
There you go. A small window into my strange way of viewing the world.
It helps put it in its role, you know, cause then it's not super important. Right. You know?
Right. And then I tend to have integrations out because I like explicit wiring, you know, middleware type code in between. And so getting stuff out into Prometheus or getting stuff out into other metric systems or writing things out into external systems, you know? And so you kind of have these shared resources, integrations in, integrations out. And then my application has a lot of pure models, but those pure models, they're often, you know, some namespace somewhere. They don't, But you need some kind of state holder, right? That is using that pure model unless your application is completely stateless, which can happen. But if your application has to maintain state, even holding a database connection is maintaining state, right? So you have these components that are holding some state because you want a certain amount of statefulness, like sessions or hang on to a database or a cache or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have these amalgamations where you have kind of a component that's using multiple components, or you have a pure model that's using multiple pure models and bring them together. You know, so those are kind of the big buckets: shared resources, integrations in, integrations out, pure models, state holders, and these amalgamations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think most of the what we would call business logic, a lot of the because, you know, when you read from a database, you know, you don't really need to test the database driver. You don't really, I mean, once the function that saves, you takes data and saves it to the database, once that works, not really important to test that function, as long as it's a small one, which we like to do. but most of the interesting logic, most of the stuff that's unique to our application goes in those pure models. And the pure models, like we said, they're pure. They're just, there's no IO in them, not even logging. And so it's important that they're kind of the core of the application, but because they are their own separate namespace, their own separate entities, then all the components, if they have one of those objects, entities, let's call them entities, I don't want to say objects, they can use that pure model to transform. And so the pure model, and I don't know if we've really delved into this in any of our episodes, but maybe that would be a good thing for a future series, is talk about what do we mean by pure models. But like, they have a higher level of functions that to name, you know, name operations, that kind of stuff, that's more of a higher level than just the actual data manipulation. And so you can look throughout the application and each of these components, and you can see, oh, I'm doing this business logic kind of transform to a model, instead of like, oh, I'm doing assoc and dissoc, that kind of stuff. And so I think the point I'm kind of getting at is all of the actual nuts and bolts is in that pure stuff and the pure models. And it makes the components actually relatively light, because they're, when they need to operate on something, they'll, you know, go to the database. Oh, well, that's just calling a different component. They'll, you know, transform the, you know, input into whatever one of the pure model, and then do whatever. But then all of the functions on it are pure, and then we can save it or we can send it back as a response, that kind of stuff. So it's the middle of the application is what's pure, and the components are what orchestrates the outside of that.
Right. It all comes together in these amalgamations. And the goal is to make the pure model as fat as possible without introducing any non-determinism, aka side effects, right? So a good amalgamation, to make this like concrete, you might have a component that is that the web server gets a reference to that component. The web component, I should say, gets a reference to this amalgamation component. I'm struggling to find a good name, so we'll just call it the amalgamation. And then when data flows in, right, the web handler is going to hand that data off by calling that component in a thread safe way. So core async channel or something like that. And then that component was going to get the work done. It's going to take this data and it's going to have a pure input transform. We've talked about those back in our Sportify series, the one we just finished. So go back and listen to that.
Mm-hmm.
And then operate on that data using this big pure model. And then it can even prep this new information for output using a pure output transform. And then it can hand that off to another integration out component that's going to go take in, you know, put it in an API, write the database, et cetera, et cetera. And so you have these I don't want to call them higher order components, but maybe you could, I guess. I like calling them amalgamations. It's where your in, your out, and your pure model all come together, right? Where the real work gets done.
And where the separation is between the pure and the impure and the IO. Yeah. Sorry.
Yes, the side effect.
Not making a moral judgment here.
Unclean.
No.
The but functions it, but, that walk around and must cry, unclean. I have an exclamation point. I shall not be touched.
Right. And these amalgamation components end up being kind of at the middle of the application. They're kind of the orchestrators between all of those, you know, databases kind of at the edge and the web components at the edge. And these components sit more in the middle. And that's where we kind of gravitate towards, because once the web component and the database component are done, you really don't touch them anymore. You know, it's these amalgamation ones where new features are implemented and bug fixes are done.
Yeah. In parallel between you grow the pure models, and mm-hmm. then that gives the amalgamations more capability, and then you have to adjust the site calls, you know, the usage of it in there. But the more work you can do in the pure model, the better. Very unit testable.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so there you go. What were we talking about? Oh, right. Main functions.
Yeah, main. We're talking about main on closure. We kind of dug deep back a bit in, there. Right?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's the only kind of application out there, right? Just close back ends, right?
That's right. The front end, that's not a real application.
Oh, no. Oh, man.
I'm kidding. Yeah. I love working on the front end, too.
We might have to. We wanted to talk about that, but I think we have to save that for next time.
That sounds what good. Yeah, let's talk about the front end next time. What's the same? What's different? What does main even mean on the front end, right?
Yes. Sorry, I'm just laughing because I've done some front end work, and there's lots of answers and lots of questions too. And there's JavaScript, and that makes for lots of work.
Yeah.
Sorry.
The last big application I wrote probably had three times as much front-end code as back-end code. So I'm not throwing any shade at you front-end developers. I love the front-end too. And so we'll come back to that next week. And in the meantime, while you're waiting for another exciting episode all about front-end programming, go over to Twitter, otherwise known as X, depending on what dialect of English you speak, the Musk dialect or the everyone else dialect. And you can follow us at Closure Design or send us an email at feedback@closuredesign.club or come hang out in the Closurian Slack channel. It's the Closure Design Podcast channel. And we hang out there and we love to chat.
And if you are interested in hearing more of our episodes, you can go to closuredesign.club on the web and see what episodes and series we have. I talked about it at the beginning. 114 is where we started this series, and all the way back to 1 is the beginning. We did not start on episode 0, even though we're a programming podcast. So,
okay, well, that's going to be it for this week. We will be back next week for more closure-y things. But for now, thanks for listening.